Hello there. Today is Thursday, October 12th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, wind-whipped California wildfires are growing in number and size as entire neighborhoods are torched.
We've had big fires in the past. This is one of the biggest, most serious. It's not over.
President Trump about to make a big announcement about the Iran nuclear deal. The Boy Scouts of America say they'll begin allowing girls into the club. Also ahead, movie mogul Harvey Weinstein could face a myriad of legal problems. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, fueled by the return of strong winds, the wildfires burning through California's wine country exploded in size and number on Wednesday as authorities issued new evacuation orders and the death toll climbed. 3 days after the fires began, firefighters are still unable to gain control of the blazes that have turned entire Northern California neighborhoods to ash. Joining me now for the latest is CAL FIRE Assistant Deputy Director Daniel Berlant. Thank you for being with us. I know things are very volatile right now. What's the latest?
We're battling 22 large wildfires that have burned nearly 170,000 acres overnight and throughout the morning here. The fires have been very active on several fronts. And with the winds expected to pick back up later tonight, that's going to potentially hamper our efforts on a number of the fires.
So you're really not, I believe yesterday it was 17 fires.
Yeah, so we've seen a number of new fires ignite. While we've been able to actually contain a couple of some of the large fires that started over the weekend, we are continuing to have new fires ignite, and that's why we've brought in a lot of additional resources. In fact, today we called upon a number of our neighboring states, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Arizona. They're going to send us firefighting resources, as well as the U.S. Forest Service is bringing fire engines, fire crews, bulldozers from many of the other states to come help us in this battle.
And I imagine there are still homes and structures that are still at risk.
We still have thousands of homes that are still threatened by these fires. Our estimates now put that at least 3,500 homes and commercial structures have been destroyed by these fast-moving wildfires, but tens of thousands more homes still remain threatened. Over 20,000 people are still evacuated by these fires. As early as this morning, additional evacuations have been called.
And so as long as the winds continue to change, I guess it's really unpredictable as to what's going to happen next.
The winds is the biggest factor. That's the unpredictable piece of it that makes our job even more difficult. We know conditions are dry. Fortunately, the temperatures have come down, the humidity has gone up, but these gusty winds that we're going to see over the next couple of days are going to lower that humidity and increase our fire danger.
And is this sort of getting toward the end of fire season for you guys, or are you still in the thick of it?
While we've really been seeing fires year-round, this time of year is really kind of the end of the season, but conditions at this time of year are at their driest.
Right.
And even though the temperatures start to go down in the fall months, the fact that the wind events start picking up, the winds are occurring as we transition from summer to fall to winter, and it's those winds that fan these type of fires in the months of October. Historically, it's October when we experience our largest and our most damaging wildfires.
And are you seeing it getting worse every year because of global warming?
We continue to see an increase in wildfires and the size of these fires. Climate change, a big factor in that. We're just coming off of 5 years of drought conditions, epidemics of bark beetle that have killed over 102 million trees across the state. All of this vegetation that's tinder dry, that's dead, it's all fuel for these fires to burn. Climate change definitely having an impact in just how long our fire seasons are and how much drier conditions are able to get.
And lastly, of course, I know there has been loss of life with this fire, these fires.
This has been a very deadly week for wildfires here in California. Already 21 people have confirmed to have died in these wildfires. 11 alone on the Tubbs Fire burning just outside of Santa Rosa. That makes the Tubbs Fire the sixth deadliest fire in our state's history.
And unfortunately, I would imagine that number could potentially go up.
the likelihood of finding additional fatalities is very high. Unfortunately, with just how fast these fires burned into these subdivisions and into these homes and just how many homes were destroyed, it's likely that more people were not able to get out of their homes in time.
All right, that's CAL FIRE Assistant Deputy Director Daniel Berlant. And now we're joined by James Hackwood, Santa Rosa, California resident. You yourself have been evacuated. Tell us what's going on.
I was at work Sunday night when we first got word about the fire coming over from Calistoga, where the Tubbs Fire originated from. And, you know, I used to commute over to there from the same spot in Santa Rosa, and it's a 25-minute drive through the mountains, through the hills, and back and over. And my wife, so that was about midnight when I texted my wife and said, hey, you know, there's a fire over there, let's be alert, because we knew it was windy that day. And then at 1:14, actually, right on the button, 1:14 a.m., my wife texted back and said, we just got a call to prepare to evacuate. So work was able to get me out early, and I raced home. I had to drive north on Highway 101 through the embers coming across the freeway that actually ended up hitting Coffee Park. I was going through it was lit embers, lit pieces of tree, lit pieces of everything flying across a 6-lane highway, and I had to plow through it to get home, where we had about 45 minutes before we really had to get out of there. So that's been the scariest time so far, just because it was, you know, everything was so unknown and everything hit so fast. Everything was moving so fast. I mean, every time we walked bags out to the car, the ridgeline behind our house got brighter and brighter and brighter till we could see the actual flames like lipping up into the air, and that's when we left.
Wow. And did you have time to take some, you know, important items and personal things?
We sort of powwowed a game plan over the phone, my wife and I did, and we have a box that has our passports and birth certificates and social security cards and all that ready to go. So I made sure she had grabbed that. And then, you know, we have a couple of extra papers on the desk and we grabbed those. But, you know, really it was about kids' clothes and, you know, any toiletries. And so by the time I got home, a lot of that stuff had been packed, the more essential items, you know, the documentation of things. But actually the biggest thing we worried about, we have an upstairs neighbor. We live in an apartment complex. And we know she's a single mom with a teenage daughter and she sleeps with earplugs in. And so I was actually banging on the wall of her room, of her bedroom, yelling her name, flashing the brightest flashlight I had because we couldn't get her up. My wife had been banging on the door, but we finally got her up and out, and she and her daughter were able to get out without any issues, and we loaded up our car. But we have some mementos that we had thrown in that night. You know, we had the kids pick out a few stuffed animals. I have a 10-year-old daughter and a 7-year-old son, and they picked out a few things that they, you know, wanted to take that night.
So you don't know at this point whether or not you will have a home to go back to? It just depends on the winds?
Right. So on Sunday night or Monday morning at 2 a.m, the winds were blowing from the northeast. So they were coming over from Calistoga through the mountains and down. The humidity was in the single digits. The wind speeds were gusting into the 60-mile-an-hour range, which is really big for here. Those types of winds we're not really used to in Northern California. And then come Monday afternoon into yesterday. Yesterday was a great day. All the winds came off from offshore, which is what we're normally used to. In Northern California, we're used to winds coming off the ocean over the coastal mountain ranges and into the valleys, and that's what we like. But what's changed today, why we went this morning and made a special effort to get out there, is the winds were about 10, 11 this morning. They started coming from the north and the northeast again. And they were going to be pretty heavy. Not as heavy as Sunday night, but they were going to be heavy. So we were concerned that with the change of the wind that might force the fire, which we can still see on the ridge behind our house, might force it down the hill towards us.
Well, have you witnessed any of it? Have you seen any of the damage?
My folk drove down to Petaluma for some medication for my father, and they drove down 101 through, you know, the Bicentennial area where Fountain Grove is and all that, and they saw the devastation. And my mom came home, and she grew up here, too. She was shaken. I mean, to a point, I've never seen her shaken like that. There are landmarks and businesses that have been here for generations that are completely wiped off the map. The one that gets me is if you go to the City of Santa Rosa website, the first image that pops up is the Round Barn, and it's on Fountain Grove Hill, above Fountain Grove, next to the Hilton and the Fountain Grove Inn that I'm sure everyone's heard a lot about. It's gone. There is nothing left of it, and that has been there for 120 years, 118 years, and all of our families accounted for, which is great. But we have friends that aren't accounted for. My brother's got a best friend that his image popped up on the news last night, and they're still looking for him. And but
so
it is.
You're saying people that are missing?
People that are missing that we know well. We're lucky that family's all fine. So that's the blessing on our side. But You know, my dad was just talking about it. This is one of those things where you want everyone to be okay and you want it to be over, but you know that we are just at the beginning of this because it is so, the scale is so huge. It's unbelievable.
All right. Well, we certainly wish you all the best and stay safe. Authorities don't know exactly the cause of the fires, but they do say anything from a car backfire to a tossed cigarette could bring on an inferno. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Major U.S. businesses are asking the Supreme Court to ban discrimination of gays. Donald Trump says North Korea is a problem that has to be solved. Madrid is preparing to impose direct rule on Catalonia. U.S. Justice and State Departments are joining forces to probe companies abusing visa programs. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. President Donald Trump is expected to announce as early as Thursday whether he will no longer certify Iran's compliance with the 2015 Iran nuclear agreement, giving Congress 60 days to decide whether to reimpose sanctions on Tehran. He was asked about it by reporters today as he met with the Prime Minister of Canada.
You're going to see very soon. We're going to be announcing that very shortly.
The Republican chair of the U.S. House Foreign Affairs Committee, Representative Ed Royce, said Wednesday the deal should be strictly enforced, but stopped short of saying it should be ended.
As flawed as the deal is, I believe we must now enforce the hell out of it. Let's work with allies to make certain that international inspectors have better access to possible nuclear sites, and we should address the fundamental sunset shortcoming, as our allies have recognized.
But Democratic Representative Elliot Engel said killing the deal would be a grave mistake, especially since it's backed by U.S. allies.
The United States, we in the United States, have to live up to our word. If we withdraw from the deal now, Iran would be free today from the constraints on their program and the intrusive inspections that the JCPOA puts into place. They could race headlong toward a nuclear bomb, hold all of the benefits of sanctions relief, and continue fomenting instability across the region.
The agreement under which Iran agreed to freeze its nuclear program for 15 years in exchange for sanctions relief is viewed in Europe as a rare triumph of international diplomacy in the Middle East. Well, the Boy Scouts of America announced Wednesday that it would allow girls to join its clubs at various levels. Michael Sarbaugh, the Boy Scouts of America chief scout executive, said the decision is true to the BSA's mission and core values, which include trustworthy, loyal, helpful, kind, brave, and reverent. Virtues, he says, are important to both young men and young women.
Our families are looking for a way to involve both their sons and their daughters in a program. So we've been looking for years at the educational value. Is Cub Scouting, the content, the curriculum, is it as relevant for little girls as it is little boys? And educators and our parents have said it absolutely is. So we provide a pathway so that girls can now participate fully in Cub Scouting.
Unlike the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts have maintained girls-only status for all their programs. The empowerment of girls is at the core of their mission. In February, the 107-year-old Boy Scouts organization announced it would also admit transgender children into its scouting programs. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, the sexual harassment scandal surrounding one of Hollywood's most powerful movie producers deepened this week as a report published in the New Yorker magazine accused Harvey Weinstein of raping three women. The story said 16 current and former employees of the Weinstein Company and Miramax either witnessed or knew of Weinstein's sexual abuse. According to the report, employees said Weinstein's sexual deviancy was widely known. Among the accusers are some of Hollywood's A-listers, including Angelina Jolie, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Rosanna Arquette. Joining me now to discuss what legal problems these allegations could pose for Weinstein is San Diego criminal defense attorney David Shapiro. Now, David, we've heard a lot about the condemnations and the accusations, but not much about what, if any, legal trouble he could be in. What could he be facing?
Well, there's a couple of different things going on here that he's facing criminally. There's in multiple states. You know, some of the charges may be barred by statute of limitations. Doesn't mean it's the last we've heard of it in a criminal courthouse. All it means is that certain states and their prosecutorial agencies might not be able to file criminal charges against them, particularly in New York, depending on the charges, particularly in California, depending on the charges as well. So it all depends on how seriousness the accusations are, what state they could be prosecuted, and whether or not they're going to use some of these prior uncharged acts to basically bolster the whatever it ultimately does get charged.
But if there are charges, what could they potentially be? I mean, we've heard the word rape used, we've heard harassment, but it sounds like, you know, even in one situation there was something that was on tape, but there were no charges filed in that situation.
Correct. Yeah, in New York, my understanding of statute of limitations is if it's an aggravated sexual assault, there are no statute of limitations on it. So if there's something involving, you know, forcible sexual contact like skin to skin or oral sex or something along those lines, I don't think they would be barred from filing charges, at least not by the statute of limitations. The one that was on the recording, my understanding, would have only been a misdemeanor accusation, basically just like a groping over the clothes, not basically to minimize it, but basically in the grand scheme of things being probably a misdemeanor charge. And that probably would be barred by the statute of limitations in New York. In California, for most misdemeanors, it's 1 year from the date of the offense. Just because something's not barred by the statute of limitations doesn't mean it's an automatic file for the prosecution. There's a lot of other factors they need to look into as well.
We are hearing accusations of rape. Now, that's a crime.
Correct.
But after the fact, would that be hard to prosecute?
Well, after the fact, what they don't have is they won't have, or at least based on my understanding of everything, they won't have DNA.
Right.
They don't have a confession or a recording of him admitting to anything similar to the one incident in New York, which appears to be one of the least serious accusations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what they have are the motivations of these women coming forward and why after a certain period of time they would all come forward at once, and whether their primary motivation is to seek justice and prevent this from happening if it did in fact happen to other people, or if their primary motivation is to get on the gravy train, so to speak, and, you know, take down this guy and get some of his money in the process. That's something that his defense attorneys, assuming criminal charges are filed, will certainly have a lot of ammunition with, because he's certainly going to assemble the best team money could buy, and they're certainly going to look at the length of time between alleged criminal acts and their ultimate disclosures, and that's something they're going to have a lot to work with. From a defense standpoint,
there are certainly a lot of women coming out with a lot of accusations. So would you say, is it safe to say that he does face a myriad of legal woes at this point?
Yeah, I mean, he's looking at criminal charges, and even if criminal charges don't come out, he's looking at civil charges. The burden of proof is significantly lower in civil charges. There may be less of an issue with statute of limitations in civil court, you know, not to mention an expedited divorce. My understanding is his wife has filed paperwork and getting everything going there, probably trying to get out with her share of things before payouts come into play, criminal restitution.
Mm-hmm.
Along those lines as well. So he's dealing with this pretty much any and all angles, certainly not out of hot water, even if no criminal charges come of it.
Do you think there's any possibility he could actually face jail time?
Yeah, I mean, if he's charged with a crime, I mean, similar type conduct in California would almost be a slam dunk that he would face significant state prison time, not to mention have to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life if prosecuted in California. You know, there's a lot of serious accusations here, and if a tenth of these accusations are true, and if they could be prosecuted legally, and if a jury will convict based on that evidence, you know, he definitely will be facing state prison time.
That's San Diego criminal defense attorney David Shapiro. Thanks for your time. Turning now to what's trending on social media, we're joined by Andrew Palchewski. Hey, Andrew, what's going on?
Lori, it is a social media crisis.
Oh.
Facebook is down.
What?
People are not able to get on Facebook. Or at least they weren't on Wednesday,
man.
For a couple
that
of hours.
That is a crisis.
Yes, it was. Facebook and Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, were both down for about 2 hours on Wednesday. And this sent everybody into a social media frenzy. People were freaking out, wondering if their information was going to be deleted, wondering if there was an attack on Facebook, wondering what was going on. So we got this statement on Wednesday from Facebook. They said, earlier today, referring to Wednesday, a networking issue caused some people to have trouble accessing Facebook services. We quickly investigated and started restoring access within about an hour, and we have nearly fixed the issue for everyone. We are sorry for the inconvenience. So
wow.
Facebook apologizing. No word from them yet as to what exactly happened and why Facebook went down. But my favorite nugget of information from this is that this was a trending topic worldwide on Twitter. Because,
so,
of course,
right.
Nobody could get on Facebook.
So everyone is freaking out about their favorite social media site not being able to get on it. And
on
so
a different social
they're
media
venting
site.
On another social media site.
Exactly. So hashtag Facebook down was trending throughout the day. Even after Facebook came back up, people were still using that hashtag on Twitter.
And what in the world did we do before social media? How did we survive?
I just don't know. I just don't know, Lori.
All right. I don't know if you can top that, but you got anything else?
Well, I can try. There's one person I think who could probably generate more social media excitement than Facebook being down or anything else, and that person is Taylor Swift.
Oh.
Of course. The Swifties are a huge group on social media.
Okay.
She has fans all over the world. And Taylor Swift has announced she's going to capitalize on that. She is launching the Swift Life. It is her own social media app.
Really?
You can download the Swift Life and you can get interactive material with Taylor Swift. You can get Taymojis, which are Taylor Swift-specific emojis. You can get access to exclusive content and concert tickets.
Wow.
This is not
new. Talk about
new.
Branding yourself.
Oh, it's branding, of course. This is not new, though, because other pop stars and celebrities have done this, like Katy Perry and Britney Spears.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, Lori. It is all about the branding and the money, because this is going to bring more people in to buy tickets and merchandise and all that kind of stuff. Now, this launches later this year. Again, back to the money. Coincidentally, so does Taylor Swift's latest album. That album drops November 10th, and this app is coming out right around the same time. So an interesting coincidence of timing that you have her album coming out and this app as well. I don't think it was a coincidence.
Uh-huh. All right. Thanks, Andrew. You can follow him on Twitter at APAL. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Well, a country music star is releasing a new album focused on children. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins International Edition's Sarah Williams with all the details.
She owns her own amusement park in her name. She is a movie actress who's been nominated for several Academy Awards. She's been up for 49 Grammy Awards in her 53-year career, and now she's coming out with her very first children's album ever. Dolly Parton is who we're talking about today.
Wow.
That's quite an interesting name to throw around here in today's contemporary pop world.
It is. I was just going to ask you that. She's usually associated with country music.
She is. And for today, she's doing something that not just appeals to country kids, but kids worldwide. She's releasing her first children's album, which is called I Believe in You. And as I mentioned, she started her career 53 years ago. And this is her 44th album. And it's interesting that she chose to release a children's album because she and her husband, Carl Dean, unfortunately were not blessed with children, unable to have children at an early age. But Dolly has written many hits, which are enjoyed by kids and adults alike. And so she just said, you know, there's kids around the world I love and love me back. And I do so much for kids. I decided to come out with a kids album. So we're going to play a song from that album, the title track. The album is called I Believe in You. And here's the song.
Just like that little story that we've all read about, that says I can, I think I can, and I am here to shout that there's a little engine inside of all of us that says we can do anything if we just don't give up.
You know, Larry, it's interesting you said that about the fact that Dolly herself and her husband, they don't have their own children. However, she grew up in a big family. I believe she was one of 12 children herself. and consequently a lot of nephews and nieces. So I have a feeling she's been around a lot of kids.
Oh, yes, and she's Miley Cyrus's godmother, and, you know, she's done so much for kids around the world. Of course, she's been on the Sesame Street show a number of times, and she's done so many things involving children. And she started a foundation a few years ago, and she's donating the proceeds from the sales of this album to her Imagination Children's Library, which is donating books for kids around America that don't have books to read. And she's donated about 100 million books so far. That's an awful lot of books. So she's definitely somebody who's been associated with children. And I had a chance to interview her. And that interview will air on Friday's Border Crossings, this week on Friday. So you'll hear Dolly Parton and I speak about the new album. And last year, she completed her first tour in 25 years.
Wow.
And she's going strong at age 71, still as bubbly and perky and happy and fun to talk to as she was many, many moons ago.
Was this the first time you interviewed her?
Was the very first time, and hopefully won't be the last time. I told her, hope we don't have to wait 25 more years for another tour. She promised me that that wouldn't be the case. But she's won so many awards and has done so many things. And, of course, 9 to 5 was a number one hit. During the interview, we spoke about her big hit, I Will Always Love You, which she sang. But it was Whitney Houston who made that song a number one song. And she tells the story of how Elvis wanted to record that song, and she said no. And she'll tell us why in the interview this Friday.
I was just going to ask you why, but
I can't
we'll
tell
have to
you,
wait.
Sarah.
We'll have to wait.
You have to listen.
All right. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
Well, that was a fun way to end the show. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is in mourning after the horrific shooting that took place at an outdoor music concert in Las Vegas October 1st that claimed the lives of 58 people and wounded hundreds more. The shooter was found dead from apparently self-inflicted wounds in the hotel room where he carried out the attack. Investigators have not yet attributed a motive for the largest mass shooting in modern American history, but the FBI has said no evidence of terrorism has emerged so far. President Donald Trump flew to Las Vegas to meet with victims of the massacre and speak to first responders, law enforcement officials, and civilians who came to the aid of their countrymen during the attack. There are many such people in the latter category, men like Jonathan Smith, who is credited with saving the lives of at least 30 people until he was felled by two bullets and dragged to safety by off-duty policeman Tom McGrath, or cab driver John Zequera Jimenez, who repeatedly drove into danger to transport people away from the carnage. In his remarks to law enforcement officials, President Trump asked God to bless the men and women who protect us and bring healing to the families of the wounded, the injured, and the fallen. He also said, "In the depths of horror, we will always find hope in the men and women who risk their lives for ours."
We cannot be defined by the evil that threatens us or the violence that incites such terror. We're defined by our love, our caring, and our courage. In the darkest moments, what shines most brightly is the goodness that thrives in the hearts of our people.
"We are blessed to be surrounded with heroes," President Trump said.
As one eyewitness recounted this week, while everyone else was crouching, police officers were standing up as targets, just trying to direct people and tell them where to go. Parents and spouses used their own bodies as shields to protect their loved ones. Americans dashed into a hail of bullets to rescue total strangers.
In the months ahead, President Trump said, we will all have to struggle with the horror of what has unfolded, but we will struggle through it together. We will endure the pain together, and we will overcome together as Americans.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.